I could spot one when I saw one. I love a good crime story, especially the FBI. Crime shows come on late, and I sneak to catch whatever Big Ma falls asleep watching. That's how this guy looked, like he was calling his ma to see if the coast was clear to come home without the mob or the coppers on his tail. He saw us standing with our arms folded and turned his back to us. I got it. He had a lot of dimes and planned to use each one. We went inside Ming's. We were barely in the restaurant, which wasn't a restaurant, just a counter with a kitchen on the far side and two small tables with benches on our side. The Chinese lady behind the counter said, "No free egg rolls. No more free egg rolls." She waved her hands like shoestring cat. I didn't know how to answer. I didn't ask for any free egg rolls. But we were the only ones inside Ming's, and she was staring straight at me. Vonetta said, "We don't want free egg rolls." Fern piped in, "We want shrimp lo mein and Pepsi." Vonetta said, "And four plates, four forks, four napkins, and four cups." Fern, "And four egg rolls." Vonetta, "All for money, not for free." Finally, I said, "It's takeout, to go." I uncurled the $10 bill to show her. Usually, I'm a Johnny on the spot, speaking up for my sisters and me. But this time, I went blank for no reason I could think of. It was nice to have Vonetta and Fern jump right in. The lady shouted in Chinese to the back of the kitchen. She sounded even meaner than when she'd said, "No free egg rolls." I decided that just like Cecile was crazy, the Chinese lady was mean. Mean lady mean. She nodded to us and said, "Okay, seat." We sat down and waited. Mean Lady Mean kept talking. "Everybody poor. Everybody hungry. I give free egg roll. Feel sorry. Then everyone call for free egg roll." She muttered on like Cecile did and looked mean and tired like Big Ma looks on washboard days. While I was sitting with my sisters, I made up my mind about Oakland. There was nothing and no one in all of Oakland to like. I would get on a plane and fly back to New York if Big Ma showed up wanting her grandbabies. I wouldn't even tell Cecile, "Thanks for the visit." Collect call. Mean Lady Ming laid a dollar bill and a few coins on the counter. She handed me the brown paper bag with the food, gave Vonetta the bottle of Pepsi and a small bottle of fruit punch, then gave Fern a paper bag with the plates, cups, forks, and napkins. I scooped up all of the change. There were at least two dimes in coins, which was enough to call home to Brooklyn Collect. When we went outside, the beakish guy with the floppy afro was gone. We all squeezed into the phone booth with our bags from Ming's. I hooked my finger inside the hole for zero on the phone and dialed. The operator came on and I spoke up. "Operator, I want to make a collect call to Louis Gaither." Papa's proper name felt strange coming from my mouth. I said it again clearer, although the operator didn't ask me to. Instead, she asked for my name and I gave it to her. "Delphine." There's nothing mumbly about the way I talk. I don't swallow my letters or run them together. The operator still asked, "Can I have that again?" As if she didn't get it the first time. I broke it into syllables. "Del. Fiend." She told me to stay on the line. While she was ringing Pa, I realized my Timex was still on Brooklyn time and that it was after 11 o'clock. Pa rose in the dark for work and was asleep by 9. I started to wind the stem when the operator came back. "Go ahead, miss."
"Hello? Hello?"
Big Ma sounded far away, but we heard her and were glad to have reached home. Already, Vonetta and Fern began puppy yelping in the background and grabbing at the phone. I gave them a stern look to make them quit it. Before I could say, "We're here in Oakland with Cecile," Big Ma said, "Delphine, do you know how much this phone call is costing your father?" There was no time to be tongue-tied. I spoke up. But Papa said call.
Not collect, Delphine? Why'd you get a thought like that?
All knew you girls should have never left Brooklyn. You fly out to Oakland and lose your last ounce of common sense? Let me speak to your mother.
She's not here, I said. She's in her house.
Vonetta and Fern were still shouting to Big Ma and Papa, who had to be asleep.
And why are you out in the street in the middle of the night? I'm going to tell your papa about this.
Big Ma scolded and fussed, running up the phone bill even higher. When she was done telling me about myself and about that no kind of mother Cecile, I told her we were safe and said goodnight, and Vonetta and Fern hollered,
"Goodnight, Big Ma and Pa."
Then I hung up the phone.
At least I had done what Pa had told me to do.
I called. Cecile guarded the kitchen swinging door and pointed us to the living room, where she had laid out a waxy tablecloth on the floor. We spread out around the cloth. Cecile took over everything, dumping shrimp lo mein and egg roll on each plate, tossing everyone a fork and a napkin. To me, she said, "Pour the drinks," which I did. This was the most mothering we got, if you don't count her coming to claim us. Not that I wanted or needed any mothering. I was just thinking about Vonetta and Fern. They were expecting a mother, at least a hug. Look at how y'all have grown. A look of sorrow and a plea for forgiveness. I knew better. At least that was one thing Cecile and Big Ma had in common. Big Ma had no forgiveness for Cecile, and Cecile had no need for it. Mean Lady Ming had thrown in a pair of chopsticks. Vonetta and Fern eyed the wooden sticks and formulated ideas about turning them into hairpins, play fight swords, and pickup sticks. Cecile ended all of that when she broke the sticks joined at the top, rubbed them against each other like she was kindling twigs for a campfire, then wrapped noodles around them and shoved the noodles, shrimp, and sticks into her mouth. We were all staring. We'd never seen anyone eating with chopsticks other than on TV. We'd never seen colored people eating with them, and here was our mother eating with chopsticks like the Chinese men that I'd read about who worked on the railroads. She ate hungrily, setting no type of table manner examples for us, her daughters. Cecile knew our eyes were on her. With a mouthful of food, she said,
"Thought y'all were hungry."
We picked up our forks and ate. When we were done, Cecile grabbed everything that hadn't been used. Soy sauce, spicy mustard, her fork, an extra cup that mean Lady Ming had thrown in. She told us to stay right there while she brought everything into the kitchen. So we stayed put. I thought she might want to talk to us, find out how we were doing in school, what we liked and didn't like, if we ever had chicken pox or our tonsils taken out. While I thought about what I'd tell her, we heard a knock on the door, then another loud knock. We jumped up to look through the curtains, but Cecile came out of the kitchen. "Get back in the room, get." And we did. But I had caught a glimpse through the curtain. I'd already seen three people in dark clothes with afros. For the people. We were trained spies back in Brooklyn. Scrunched together, pressing our ears to the door, wall, or air, we used hand signals and mouth words instead of whispered. If necessary, I could shush my sisters with a glare to bottle up their loose giggling. You can't giggle and be a spy. It was by pressing our ears to the air that we had heard Pa say,
"No, Ma, they need to know her, and she needs to know them. They're flying to Oakland, that's final."
It had been all we could do not to let on when Pa sat us down the next morning. The knock on the door, Cecile ordering us to hide in our room, and her clearing away all evidence of us were not actions of a mother. These were actions of a secret agent, or a fugitive from justice. Someone who doesn't open her door wide and welcoming like Big Ma does when the doorbell rings. Hers were the actions of someone who wears hats, scarves, and shades to keep from being recognized. kind of like the guy in the phone booth. Someone obviously hiding out. Once again, we fell into our spying positions, angling ourselves at the cracked door to see while pressing our ears against the air. From there, we could see pieces of the three figures who entered Cecile's house. All wore dark colors. One had on a black jacket and a black beret. The other two, black t-shirts and black berets over afros. We steadied our heavy, excited breathing to hear what we could. It wasn't long after greeting one another that their talking turned to arguing. It was their voices, all three of them against hers. It sounded like,
"Seize the time. For the people. Time is now."
Versus her,
"Me. My.
No.
No."
Then each one of them firing off.
"People.
The people.
The people."
Against her,
"My art. My work. My time. My materials. My printing press. Me. My. No. No."
I was sure they were Black Panthers. They were on the news a lot lately. The Panthers on TV said they were in communities to protect poor Black people from the powerful, to provide things like food, clothing, and medical help, and to fight racism. Even so, most people were afraid of Black Panthers because they carried rifles and shouted Black Power. From what I could see, these three didn't have rifles, and Cecile didn't seem afraid. Just annoyed because they wanted her things, but she didn't want to give them. Big Ma said God could not have made a being more selfish than Cecile. At least she was like that with everyone, not just us. Cecile said,
"Paper isn't free. Ink isn't free. My printing press isn't free. I'm not free."
One of them answered,
"None of us is free, Sister Inzilla. Eldridge Cleaver isn't free. Huey Newton isn't free. H. Rap Brown isn't free. Muhammad Ali isn't free."
I knew he meant her, Cecile, when he said Inzilla. I didn't know some of those other names. Only Huey Newton, the Black Panther leader, and Muhammad Ali, who used to be Cassius Clay. I guess the others were Black Panthers or Black people who were in prison. I knew Ali had refused to go to Vietnam and fight like Uncle Darnell was doing. I still didn't get what any of that had to do with Cecile. Another one said,
"That's why everyone must contribute to the cause."
The third voice added,
"Like Huey said, we should all carry the weight, and those who have extreme abilities will have to carry extremely heavy loads."
They were words thrown back and forth. Long, unfamiliar words ending in shun, ism, and actic, with more talk about the people thrown in for good measure, like Big Ma throwing a pinch of salt into the cake batter. They weren't just talking. The three Black Panthers were rapping, laying it down, telling it like it is, like talking was their weapon. Their words versus her words. Hers falling, theirs rising. When her voice fell as low as she would allow it, she stamped her foot and said,
all right, but you gotta take my kids.
And shortly after, they were gone. We retreated from the door and jumped on the top daybed. This was the next part after the spy missions, pulling together what we'd learned. Vanetta asked,
is she giving us away?
Then Fern,
to those people?
I shook my head no. She couldn't explain that to Papa.
Or to Big Ma,
Fern said.
Then who were those people?
Vonetta asked.
In the black clothes.
Telling her to carry the weight.
Talk, talk, talking on and on and on, Fern said.
They're Black Panthers. They're probably who she's running from. Vonetta asked.
Who are the Black Panthers?
You know, like Frida's brother. I made the Black Power sign with my fist. Only Big Ma and I watch the news. Big Ma enjoys hearing about all the troubles going on in the world. It isn't that she actually likes it. She just needs to hear about everything and talk about it. Since Pa works all day and is tired at night, Big Ma gives me her opinions while I wash dishes. You name it. President LBJ, Ho Chi Minh in North Vietnam, Martin Luther King's funeral, Bobby Kennedy's funeral, the race riots, the sit-ins, Elizabeth Taylor's next husband, the Black Panthers. Each holds Big Ma's interest.
It has something to do with Cecile's paper, I said.
And her ink, Vonetta said.
And the people, Fern said.
We couldn't imagine what tied all three things together. Then Vonetta suggested,
maybe they want her to write a poem.
About the people, Fern said.
Using her special inks and papers, Vonetta said. Pa had told us Cecile wrote poems, but I'd already known that. Flashes of Cecile chanting words, tapping a rhythm with her pencil, then writing. And Uncle Darnell had said I was always there, quiet in the kitchen while she chanted, tapped, and wrote. I'd get those flashing pictures, put in pieces.
Vonetta asked, can they make you write poems?
Then Vonetta fixed her voice deep like a man's.
You better write a poem about the people or else.
Fern and I laughed at her. She loved entertaining us. They don't send the Black Panthers to your house to make you write a poem, I said. Vonetta's eyes lit up fox bright. She had an idea.
Cecile prints up her own money. How else do you think she got this house? Cecile is printing her own money in the kitchen. That's why we can't go in there, and that's why she didn't cook fried chicken. Or Nana pudding.
I shook my head. With all the money she'd have to print up to buy this house, the FBI would have tracked her down and thrown her in the pokey.
The pokey.
That made Fern laugh. Then Vonetta and Fern started dancing and singing.
You do the hokey pokey and you turn yourself around. That's what it's all about.
Glass of water. If we were at home with Pa and Big Ma, we would have been bathed and in bed an hour and 5 minutes ago. But we weren't in Brooklyn. We were in Oakland with Cecile. I glanced at my trusty Timex. I wasn't mad that Vonetta had gotten the Timex with a pink wristband and couldn't hold on to it, while mine is plain brown and still on my arm. My brown leather wristband is just fine. It's the clock part that matters anyway. I can count on it to keep things running on schedule. Its waterproof face told me what I needed to know at 9:35 in the evening. That it took 3 minutes for warm water and a handful of Tide soap powder to make the right amount of suds. 15 minutes was enough time for the day's dirt to fall to the bottom of the tub, while Vonetta and Fern styled bubble beehive hairdos on their heads and beards on each other. But give them 1 minute longer and I'd end up pulling Fern off of Vonetta and mopping up sops of water splashed onto the bathroom tiles. After I got my sisters in, out, dried, and lotioned, I took my bath, setting my watch on the porcelain edge to keep my eye on my own 12 minutes in the tub. The watch part might have been waterproof, but the plain brown leather band didn't care for soap and hot water. Bath water made the leather hard and clammy against my skin. I always took it off. Only when I sat in the tub did I wish my Timex wasn't so reliable or the ticking so steady. Oh, how I wish the minute hand would slow down and give me time for a nice long soak. Wish all I wanted. I couldn't leave Vonetta and Fern alone to sort out who'd sleep at what end of the day bed. 3 extra minutes in the tub and I'd be sorry. I stuck to the schedule. We were in our summer 90s. Vonetta and Fern lay side by side, their elbows propped up on the higher bed while I sat on the lower bed. Fern's eyelids grew droopy. Still, she yawned and demanded story time. I opened Peter Pan, one of the books I'd checked out for a 2-week loan before we'd left Brooklyn. I had it all worked out and counted the pages I'd read each night, dividing that by 28 days. I had $2.80 in my drawer at home to pay for the late fees for the remaining 2 weeks when we returned to Brooklyn. This Peter Pan was better than the Peter Pan coloring books at home. It was a real book, thick with more than 100 pages of adventure. Vonetta and Fern were soon under the spell of Peter and Wendy flying like fairies. Both Vonetta and Fern gave out 3 pages sooner than I had planned. I put my bookmark, a coaster from the airplane, in the right spot and pulled the blanket over my sister's. As quiet as a spy, I unbuckled my suitcase and took out my borrowed copy of Island of the Blue Dolphins. I turned off the gooseneck floor lamp and sat in the hallway where light beamed from the living room. Cecile was in her kitchen doing whatever she did in there. I fell asleep with my book in my lap. What woke me was a thump. Through clouded, sleepy eyes, I made out the back of Fern's ruffled nightie. Her little heels were headed to Cecile's kitchen. I shook myself awake and jumped to my feet. As sure as I knew Cecile was crazy and unmotherly, I knew I must stop Fern. It was too late. I wasn't fast enough to catch hold of Fern's nightie. Cecile was right there, guarding whatever she was hiding in her kitchen. Sleepy and sweet-voiced, Fern asked, "Can I have a glass of water?" Papa could never bring himself to say no to Fern. He left that to Big Ma, Vonetta, and me. But Cecile said, "Drank the water in the bathroom."
"It's nasty," Fern said.
"Then you ain't thirsty, little girl."
"I'm not little girl, I'm Fern."
"She didn't mean." My mouth sped to Fern's rescue, but Cecile's raised hand stopped me. I got the message, and she lowered her stop sign.
"Let's get one thing straight, little girl. No one's going in my kitchen."
It's hard to believe the last time they'd seen each other, Fern had been a loaf of bread in Cecile's arms. That was how Uncle Darnell told it to me. Some pieces of it I even remember. How Cecile had nursed Fern, burped her, and placed her in her crib before leaving us. It's funny that Cecile had at least thought to give Fern a last drink, but all the same left Fern wanting her milk. Now they stood across from each other. Cecile towering over Fern with her arms crossed, and Fern looking up at Cecile. Fern balled both fists, banging them against her side like she usually did before she jumped on Vonetta. I took one of Fern's fists in my hand and eased it flat. Then I put on my talking to white folks voice and said, "Can you get her a glass of cold water?" I'm used to doing what's hard. Like 3 days worth of homework in one night to catch up from being out of school sick. Like 46 push-ups in 60 seconds to win a bet with a boy. Like standing mean-mouthed over Vonetta and Fern until they swallow a tablespoon each of hard pine cough syrup. But saying please without actually saying it to someone you don't want to say please to in the first place tops the list of hard. When Cecile raised her hand, I pushed Fern back, not knowing if she raised her hand only to point down at Fern. I didn't know Cecile yet. I didn't know how mean or crazy she was. She said, "Stay out there." Then she backed into the kitchen muttering, "Didn't ask no one to send you here, no way." When the door had swung, I heard a rustle between the flash of opening and closing, like fall leaves rustling. I looked up in time to see white wings hanging from above the quick flash of the open door. To the normal kids in my classroom, that would have looked crazy. White wings hanging in the kitchen. But I remembered strange things that got me laughed at in school. Things about Cecile. I'd been dumb enough to volunteer facts about my mother for show and tell. "My mother writes on cereal boxes and on the wall," I'd said proudly in the second grade. And this, the white wings hanging in her house, wasn't strange at all. It was halfway what I'd expected. I would hate to think she had left us to lead a normal cookie-bacon pork-chop-frying life. The sink ran full force. I heard opening and slamming. Metal banging against the countertop, maybe. cracking and shaking, the rock crackling of ice in a metal tray. More opening and slamming again. Fern clung to my side and then inched behind me. Cecile came out holding the extra paper cup from Mean Lady Ming's. Seeing Fern hiding behind me, she said, "It's too late for all of that. Here, take it." Fern stayed put, so I went to take the cup. Cecile pulled back, spilling a few drops at her feet. "Little girl, you better take this if you want it." Fern's fist balled from behind her nightie, and again I reached out, but Cecile glared like, "Girl, I will knock you down." Fern stepped from behind me and took the cup from Cecile's hand.
"I'm not little girl. I'm Fern."
"Well, you better drink this cup of ice water, little girl. Every last drop."
Fern drank it all down without stopping. Probably to prove she could. Probably to not stand near Cecile any longer than she had to. Then she handed me the cup with ice, and I returned it to Cecile. As many times as Big Ma said it, I never fully believed it. That no one, not even Cecile, needed to have their way so badly or was so selfish. That she could leave Pa, Vonetta, Fern, and me over something as small and silly as a name. That Cecile left because Pa wouldn't let her pick out Fern's name. But I saw and heard it with my own ears and eyes. She refused to call Fern by her name, and that made Big Ma right about Cecile. Inseparable. "If you girls want breakfast, go on down to the People Center." We said all together, "The People Center?" Without skipping a beat, Cecile said, "Next to the library on the Orchard. Just keep walking till you see kids and old people lined up." "You're not going to take us?" I didn't mean it to worm out as a question and was mad at myself for asking instead of stating. "You don't need me to walk down the street. The park is on the other side. Y'all can run around after breakfast or stay for the program at the center. It don't make me no difference." Cecile pointed a fountain pen at me. Two more pens were stuck in her hair. "You the oldest. You can read street signs." Vonetta, indignant, said, "I can read street signs too."
"Me too."
Instead of saying, "I didn't ask for all of that, like I expected," Cecile smacked her palm against her thigh and said,
"Then that settles it. Step out this door, cross the street, keep going a block till you get to Orchard. If you can read, you can't miss the O in Orchard. Turn left, keep walking till you see the library. Center's on the same block, can't miss it. Nothing but black folks in black clothes rapping revolution and a line of hungry black kids."
Then she cut herself off from us, tapped her fountain pen and repeated, "Black folks in black clothes rapping revolution." We had Black Panthers in Brooklyn. Black Panther posters with "Seize the Time" stapled onto telephone poles. We just never had any Black Panthers marching down Herkimer Street, knocking on our door demanding that we give to the cause or calling us some kind of sister name we had never heard of. My sisters and I didn't make a move toward the door. We couldn't believe our ears. Our crazy mother was sending us outside to find militant strangers if we wanted to eat. She said, "Wait." I hope she had changed her mind about us going to the center. She went into the kitchen and came out with a cardboard box, a little smaller than the shoebox for Papa's work boots. "Here," she said, "take this to the center. Give it to the Panthers. Tell them it's from Inzilla." That's what I thought she said. Inzilla. She put the box in my hands. "Who do I?"
"Just find a black beret. Any black beret will do. Make sure you tell them I gave to the cause. You tell them. Don't come knocking on my door asking for my materials."
I knew I wouldn't be telling no Black Panthers what Cecile said, that she gave to the cause and not to come knocking on her door for her stuff. I just took the box and nodded, because that's how you treat crazy people. You nod and count down 27 days for crazy to come to an end. Vonetta and Fern looked to me for what to do next, and Cecile noticed this. There was no lip smile from Cecile, but her eyes found it funny that they always looked to me first. "Come on," I said. "Let's go get breakfast." We were about to leave, but Fern stopped cold. Her eyes bugged out and she balled her fists.
"Wait, wait!"
Vonetta and I waited while she ran into the back room, her steps all buffalo stomps. I didn't mind Fern stomping because it annoyed Cecile that her house had been invaded by our mouths, wants, and feet. It served her right. Both Vonetta and I knew why Fern ran back to the room. We'd been seeing this go on for years. Fern returned with Miss Patty Cake in tow. From her look of disgust, I believe Cecile would have spat on her own floor if she wouldn't have had to clean it up.
"Aren't you too big to be dragging that thing with you?"
As far as I was concerned, Cecile had nothing to say about Fern and Miss Patty Cake. Miss Patty Cake was there when Cecile wasn't. Now I smiled. I'd understood that Fern and Miss Patty Cake were like that Nat King Cole song, Unforgettable. When I'd first heard his satiny smooth voice sing Like a Song of Love That Clings to Me, I knew Miss Patty Cake was like that song of love to Fern. Cecile thought Fern would buckle under a 7-year-old's shame. When Fern didn't answer, she asked again, "Aren't you too big for all of that?" Fern shook 4 braids and barrettes and said, "No," taking delight in answering no for no's sake. No, because Cecile didn't have a hug and a kiss that Fern expected. No, because Cecile didn't leap up and get that cold glass of water. No, because Cecile had yet to call Fern, Fern. Vonetta groaned. She'd fought enough name callers on behalf of Miss Patty Cake. I'd fought my share, too, but so what? It was for Fern and her doll. Except for going to school and church, Fern and Miss Patty Cake had been inseparable for as long as Fern or anyone else could remember. Cecile shook like we had given her the willies. She probably asked herself, "Who are these kids?" There was no use in standing around for a long farewell and a list of do's and don'ts. We weren't leaving Big Ma. We were leaving Cecile with her kitchen and her palm tree. And just as I felt we had gotten the last lick by turning and going, Cecile said, "Don't kill yourself to get back here. Stay out till sundown." We walked along the street, a moving triangle. Me in the front, Vonetta and Fern with Miss Patty Cake behind me at both sides. "I want to go home."
"Me too."
I knew which home they meant. I said, "We're going back home in 27 days.
"Let's call Papa," Vonetta said. "And Big Ma."
I said, "Not yet. Big Ma hasn't gotten over the collect call from yesterday. We got to get up enough dimes to make a real call across the country." Vonetta said,
"We should call Papa. Tell him she's mean.
And she don't want us. And she won't cook or let us in the kitchen.
To get a cold glass of water.
In her kitchen.
In her house."
I said, "We will, just not yet." Vonetta said,
"If Big Ma knew, and Papa, they'd be here lightning quick to get us."
"Yeah, quick like lightning." I said, "We'll need a lot of dimes." Breakfast program. We found the center like Cecile said we would. A line of hungry kids waited for breakfast, except they weren't all black. There were older teens in mostly black clothes and afros posted like soldiers guarding the outside. That hardly seemed necessary when a white and black police car circled around the block. Vonetta was already smiling and showing anyone who'd look her way that she was worth a smile back. She had picked out 3 girls who looked alike enough to be sisters, each one as thick as my sisters and I were lanky. They wore white boots and daisy dresses with flared sleeves. They might as well have been going to a go-go, not to a free breakfast. I kept Fern near, my arms crossed before me. I was here to make sure my sisters and I ate breakfast and to stay out of Cecile's hair. If Vonetta wanted to get her feelings hurt chasing after smiles and go-go boots, that was on her. The Panthers opened the doors and we trailed inside, the three of us sticking close together. As we entered, I did what Cecile said. I handed the box to the first Black Panther I saw and said, "This is from Cecile." I wasn't about to call her some name I didn't know or tell them she said to leave her alone. The Black Panther guy opened the box. He took out a sheet from a stack of paper, a flyer with a crouching Black Panther and some writing on it, and held it up to examine it. He nodded, said, "Thank you, sister," and took the box with him. The three girls in the flower dresses were standing on line looking at us. Vonetta tried to steer me over to them, but I didn't want to go chasing after them. Their dresses looked so nice and new. We wore shorts and sun tops, although Oakland wasn't as sunny as we'd imagined California would be. I found us a place on line behind Puerto Ricans who didn't look Puerto Rican but who spoke Spanish. Then I remembered our study of the 50 states. They were probably Mexicans. I thought Black Panthers would only look out for Black people, but there were the two Mexicans, a little white boy, and a boy who looked both Black and Chinese. Everyone else was Black. I'd never seen the Black Panthers making breakfast on the news. But then, beating eggs never makes the evening news. As we stood on line, a guy who should have kept walking stopped right in front of us. He crossed his arms and looked down at Fern. I recognized the beakish nose on that narrow face. He was the one in the telephone booth who had turned his back to us, like he didn't want to be seen. For all I knew, he was one of those in the black berets and afros who'd come knocking on Cecile's door last night. Now he stood across from Fern, his legs apart and his arms folded. "What is wrong with this picture?" he stated instead of asked. He knew the answer, all right. I was pretty good at reading faces. He didn't have a leather jacket, but he was one of them. On his black t-shirt was a dead white pig with flies buzzing around it and the words "Off the Pig" in white letters. His hair was a big loose afro because it was a little stringy. Stringy like Lucy Rawley's, who bragged about being part Chickasaw in the fourth grade, but by fifth grade was singing "I'm Black and I'm Proud" louder than loud because James Brown's song had made it the thing to do. The stringy afro-wearing beak man wasn't Papa grown or Cecile grown. Probably all of 19 or 20, but he thought he was something. He was putting on a show for all the other black beret wearers. When none of us spoke, he pointed and asked again the question whose answer he already knew. "What is wrong with this picture?" Fern pointed back at him and said, "I don't know what's wrong with this picture." The other Black Panthers laughed and told Fern, "That's right, little sis, don't take nothing from no one." And they slapped palms and said stuff like, "These are sisters and sillas, all right, look at them." Beak Man tried to stand up to his humiliation, shake it off. "Little sis, are you a white girl or a black girl?" Fern said, "I'm a color girl." He didn't like the sound of color girl. He said, "Black girl." Fern said, "Color." "Black girl." Vonetta and I threw our colored on top of Fern's like we were ring tossing at Coney Island. This was bigger than "Say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud." If one of us said colored, we all said colored, unless we were fighting among ourselves. "All right, then, colored girls," Big B said. "Why are you carrying that self-hatred around in your arms?" An older teenage girl in a Cal State t-shirt said, "Calvin, you crazy. Leave those colored girls alone." Big Beak, stringy-haired Calvin looked pleased with himself. I said, "That's not self-hatred. That's her doll." "Yeah, a doll baby. Miss Patty Cake." In spite of the Cal State girl and the other Black Panthers saying, "Leave those girls alone," he went on. "Are your eyes blue like hers?
Is your hair blonde like hers? Is your skin white like hers?
The girl said again, Crazy Calvin, stop it. Just stop it. Crazy Calvin turned to a lady who wore an African print dress and a matching cloth wrapped around her head.
Sister Makumbu, our colored girls here need some re-education.
And he walked away, one of those pimp walks like, how you like me now? Sister Makumbu just smiled at him like she didn't take Crazy Calvin seriously. She and the Cal State girl exchanged a look. The Cal State girl turned toward me and said, Don't mind Crazy Calvin, that's what we call him. He's a little wild. For all of that, the eggs were cold, but we ate them, along with the buttered toast and orange slices. It was better than eating air sandwiches at Cecile's. Fern hugged Miss Patty Cake, but refrained from putting a piece of toast to her doll's lips like she would have done at home. Still, the other kids laughed at her and called her white baby lover and big baby, except for the boy who looked both colored and Chinese. I told them to shut up. And that went for the three sisters in flower dresses. Even the tallest sister. No one could call Fern white baby lover, even though Miss Patty Cake was a white baby and Fern loved her. No one could call Fern a big baby but Vonetta and me. Vonetta ate her toast silently. We had cost Vonetta her summer friends with the white go-go boots and happening dresses. But I didn't care. Fern could love Miss Patty Cake all she wanted. We could call ourselves vanilla wafers, chocolate chips, or Oreo cookies for all I cared about black girls and color girls. And even though Cecile didn't bother to bring us here or stick up for Fern, the Black Panthers had slapped palms and said, Those are Sister and Zilla's all right. Even the Earth is a revolutionary. Once breakfast was over, most of the kids left, except for a dozen who stayed behind, including us. I told my sisters we might as well stick around for the summer camp program. Cecile had made it clear she didn't want to see us anytime soon, so we told Sister Makumbu our names and followed her and Sister Pat, the young woman in the Cal State t-shirt, into a classroom. I felt silly and wrong calling a grown person brother so-and-so or sister such-and-such. But thanks to Cecile, we now have brothers and sisters we had never before laid eyes on. Sure, they said brother and sister in Brooklyn, but here it was more of a title and not like you were saying him or her. As far as I could tell, none of the grown people at the center went by Mr., Mrs., or Miss. If Big Ma could see how quickly our home training had flown out the window, she would have had us on the next Boeing 727 back to New York. There was something welcoming about Sister Makumbu, whom I liked right away. If Sister Makumbu had met us at the airport, we would have felt welcome that she stepped forward to claim us. She would have wrapped us up in her green, purple, and orange African print dress and begged our forgiveness for having left us. We sat at one of the two long tables. The classroom was unlike any I had ever been in. Instead of pictures of George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and President Johnson, there was a picture of Huey Newton sitting in a big wicker chair with a rifle at his side. There were other pictures of mostly black men and a few women hung up around the room. I expected to find Dr. Martin Luther King's photograph hanging on the wall, but I was disappointed. Malcolm X and Muhammad Ali were the only faces I could name. I didn't know any of the women, although one woman looked just like Big Ma. Next to her picture were the words, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. On the walls were big sheets of line-ruled paper written in teacher's neat handwriting. The first one said, What we want, in green letters. On the other side of the wall, another said, What we believe. Vonetta didn't seem to care that we were in some sort of Black Panther summer camp, learning to become Black Panthers. Her attention was fixed on the three sisters with the flared sleeve dresses and their round, curly afros. I knew I would hear all about it later. how it was time for her to have a new hairstyle and that our clothes were baby clothes. Sister Makumbu said,
Hirohito Woods.
A boy from the other table with dark, spiky hair, brown, coppery skin, and slanted eyes groaned. He was probably my age. Sister Makumbu smiled in spite of his groaning. She beckoned him to her side, her many bracelets jangling as she waved him forward.
Hirohito will help with my demonstration.
I didn't have to turn to see Vonetta's mile-long pout. It was just like Vonetta to be envious of someone else being in the spotlight. Hirohito didn't seem thrilled. He pushed his chair backward, scraping the floor, and went sullenly up to the front. It was only from the back of his spiky head that I recognized him as the flying T-boy rider who nearly mowed us down yesterday. I had half a mind to sock him good. Sister Makumbu said,
I'm going to be the sun and Hirohito will be the earth.
She leaned and whispered something in his ear. He heaved a big sigh like he didn't want to do whatever it was she told him, but would do it anyway. The sign was for us kids, so he didn't come off as some kind of teacher's pet. Sister Makumbu nodded and said firmly,
Now, Hirohito.
He heaved another sigh and began to turn around slowly, each time taking a step to travel around Sister Makumbu, who stood still and smiled. This was better than socking him in the arm. Watching him turn around and around in his black and silver Raiders jersey, he looked down and probably felt silly. All the kids in the program, including my sisters and me, giggled. Sister Makumbu wasn't bothered by our giggling or by Hirohito sighing. She said,
The earth turns slowly on its axis, while also spinning around the sun. Day wouldn't change to night if the earth didn't spin on its axis. The seasons wouldn't change if the earth didn't travel around the sun. This means vegetation wouldn't grow, which means poor farmers couldn't harvest, and poor people couldn't eat if the earth didn't spin on its axis and travel around the sun. That one body spinning in motion affects everyone's lives. Does anyone know another word for the earth's constant spinning?
That was how I knew Sister Makumbu was a real teacher, aside from her welcoming smile and her blackboard penmanship. She asked a teacher's type of question, the kind that says, join in. Thanks to my time spent with Merriam-Webster, I had a few words in mind. Rotating, orbiting, turning, circling. I wanted to join in, but I felt silly being one of the older kids. Not as silly as Hirohito spinning around, but too old to wave my hand frantically as all the younger kids around me were doing. The older sister of the three girls also sat on her answer. She probably knew too, but left it up to her sisters, who wanted to be called on. When one of the kids called out, revolving, Sister Makumbu clapped her hands, her bangles jangled.
Yes! All of your words are right, but revolving is right on.
Sister Pat then gave the boy a cookie. Sister Makumbu said,
revolving. Revolution, revolutionary, constant turning, making things change.
Sister Pat said,
Huey Newton is revolutionary. Huey makes change.
And Sister Makumbu continued saying,
Che Guevara was a revolutionary. Che made change.
As they named all of the revolutionaries who made change, Hirohito came to a complete stop. He held out his hands, a dizzy Frankenstein, and staggered to his chair. The boy who won the cookie said,
Nice spinning, Twinkle Toes.
Hirohito rested his head on the table and closed his eyes. I just thought, serves you right. Sister Makumbu announced,
Today we're going to be like the earth, spinning around and affecting many. Today we're going to think about our part in the revolution.
Vonetta's hand shot up. I kicked her under the table, but she was determined to have everyone look at her, which meant have everyone look at us. I forgot all about Hirohito and was now afraid of what Vonetta would say next. And sure enough, Vonetta said,
We didn't come for the revolution. We came for breakfast.
Then Fern added, answer me our mother in Oakland. If Hirohito's spinning made us giggle, Varnetta's declaration made everyone, except my sisters and me, and the still dizzy Hirohito, full out laugh. The group of girls whom Varnetta had been winking at were the main cacklers. Even Sister Makumbu, caught off guard by Vanetta's and Fern's outbursts, allowed herself a chuckle. I blame Varnetta and not Fern, since I didn't want the world to learn we didn't rightfully know our mother. Fern wouldn't have uttered a word if Varnetta hadn't raised her hand to speak. Even worse, Varnetta had thrown a king-size monkey wrench into my plans. I'd hoped to ask Sister Makumbu about the name the Black Panthers called Cecile and why they called her that. I didn't know exactly how I would have asked her, but something made me believe she would know and that she wouldn't make me feel bad for asking. She certainly wouldn't have given me that, oh, you poor motherless girl, pity look, or the snooty, don't you even know your own mother's name? Sister Makumbu would have given me the plain, pure, teacher.